Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.
Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world. It's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win!
Pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, here's Jim Coyle.
Hello, everybody. Welcome aboard. It is Tuesday. Glad to have you along, as always, no matter where or how you're listening, whether it's on one of our great radio station affiliates like 97.7 ESPN, the ref, always the right call in Evansville in Southwest Indiana. Or up in the region on the Voice of the Region, 1230 AM, 104.7 FM, WJOB, and in Fort Wayne on Fort Wayne Sports Station, 1380 The Fan. Keep it locked right where you got it throughout your travels during the day. And if you're following on social media, then you know the routine. A little like, a little love, and hit the subscription button. Looking forward to Mike DeCourcy joining us today as he will stop by for his normal Tuesday visit. Steve Wolfong, national football writer for On Three, will also join us today as well. As football polls are all out, Indiana moved up to number 11. And not that that's not a nice spot to be, it is. Texas, I would love to ask some voters, what the hell are you seeing? What is it? Are you just buying the drinking the Kool-Aid? Because there's nothing there. Nothing there. But we'll see. Andrew's hung over from B-Town. It is foggy out and around in some places. Yeah, we've got rain out there. A lot of moisture in the air. So kind of like a fall morning. Is today the first day of fall, by the way? Did I hear that right? Fulton jumping on. He has a dentist appointment right now, but he's feeling super extra scared about it. So we're thinking about you, buddy. Bruce Pearl retired yesterday. A little bit of a shocker, to be honest with you. That came as a surprise to, well, most all of us. As the timing's a little weird. I just wonder why you would retire when school's already started. Now, the only reason would be because his son's taking over and he wanted to kind of guarantee that. And we'll have to see. I don't know. But, of course, there is always other possibilities. But it is what it is. And now some people thinking he's going to run for public office. I think, what's the former football coach? Dadgone it. Starts with a T. I got it in my mind. I just can't think of it. All getting into politics now. Rudy says the Illinois fan base full of joy boy liptard losers. I wonder what the boards have been like for Illinois since that beatdown. There you go, Tom. It's Tuberville, Tommy Tuberville, but close enough. Fred thinks that's the reason. Well, you know who else did that? Bob Knight did the same thing, except he did it in the middle of the freaking season. But yeah, kind of think that he kind of hamstrung Auburn a little bit. We haven't really talked about Indiana basketball. Picked up their fifth commitment of the 2027 class. 2027. Two classes away, right? Four-star guard Chase Branham from Missouri. The second high school commitment that Darren DeVries has gotten since he's taken over as head coach. And this is the future. That means they're getting out and getting with it. 6'4" guard ranked as the number 42nd overall player in the nation, according to the 2027 Rivals Industry Rankings. He's also the number 12 ranked shooting guard and number 4 player out of Missouri. The commitment came after Branham took an official visit to Indiana over the weekend, committed while on the visit on Saturday night, right before Indiana's football game against the Illini. So, pretty happy day for the two big sports for IU all the way around. I saw a video of him telling the coach, "I've had a feeling since the first visit," he told Joe Tipton of Rivals on 3. "Just felt a connection from the coaches to the players to the place. It just felt like home." Branham chose Indiana basketball over such schools as Tennessee, Iowa, Missouri, Purdue, Creighton, and many others. Big recruiting win. That's a big recruiting win for Darren DeVries. So what is Indiana getting out of Chase Branham? A pure scorer at all three levels who has the natural feel for the game of basketball based on the players that Darren DeVries has brought to Indiana in his short time as head coach. He is a coach that loves to have versatile guards that can play both on and off the ball at the high level. That's no lie. I mean, if you're coming to play for Darren DeVries, you better be ready to work your aspirin bottle off, because you don't play just on one end of the court. You're going to play defense. On the perimeter, Branham just seems to know how to be in the right spot at the right time. He has great shooting mechanics with a very smooth jump shot that feels like it's going to go in every time he lets one fly. So, another typical Darren DeVries player, but highly ranked, highly sought after. Very great news for Indiana basketball fans, as that's the kind of players you're wanting to get. Russell says Nebraska and Dustin Schutte telling fans, "Don't judge your coach by SIG. He is a once-in-a-generational coach." Well, he ain't lying. What Kurt Cignetti has done is, without anointing him as a saint, it's pretty damn remarkable. What amazes me is I don't want to say he stayed under the radar all that time, but I mean, he was James Madison, which James Madison was a formidable opponent. But I'll always wonder why he didn't get pulled up sooner to the big leagues. Because it's not even just him. Look at the talent around him, his coaching staff that he has put together. Pretty incredible. You've got possibly the best defensive coordinator in the country as well as Kurt Cignetti. I mean, they are and I don't mean to slight Mike Shanahan, but man, Kurt Cignetti and Brian Haynes are a 1-2 punch. And then you add Shanahan into that, who has learned under Kurt Cignetti. They're getting it done, so to speak. And they will certainly continue as Indiana, now ranked number 11. They should be in the top 10. But as I think I sent out a tweet yesterday, rankings are taking with a grain of salt, because if you look to at who's voted whom, where, I hate to say this, but then maybe I'll get him back on sometime, but I know that a lot of Indiana fans are not fans of Brett McMurphy, because he's usually not a big fan of IU per se. He's not a fan of anybody. So let's get that straight. He's a reporter. But he did not have Indiana ranked on his AP ballot for the 3 weeks prior to this past week's vote. Did not even have them ranked. Now, there were 12 people that didn't have them ranked. Now, you can pull up the AP voters and see who voted whom. I think Indiana's votes spanned all the way from as low as 5th to 16th. Indiana currently ranked number 11 in the latest AP poll, right behind Texas at 3-1. And so, I'm like, dude, what are you all seeing in Texas? Texas should be down around 15th. Hell, as a matter of fact, I think they should be further down than that. But we'll see. Hey, let's take a quick break. Mike DeCourcy's going to join us next. Glad to have you along. We're back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, here on this Tuesday. Joined now by the great Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News. How are you, sir? How was your weekend?
Weekend was great, Jim. I barely left the house because my niece and her husband and our granddaughter are on a cruise. So we are dog sitting.
Oh, yes.
And he just had ACL surgery. So if he was able to be a dog, it'd be fun. And it is fun.
The dog just had ACL surgery?
The dog just had ACL surgery.
Did he tear it on a 25-yard touchdown run or something?
Exactly.
Hand up?
That's exactly how it happened. And so,
it a non-contact injury?
So he is about a month out now from the surgery, and he is doing well, and he thinks he's doing better than he is. Like, he thinks he's ready to jump on the couch and go for long walks and all that kind of stuff. And so we have to keep a constant eye on him. So it, fortunately, and I don't know if you've heard about this, but there's football on television on weekends.
So I've heard about that.
The inability to leave the house, you know, I watched a lot of football. So it was a good weekend. And DJ's the best.
Well, and a good weekend to watch it. There was some pretty good games on. There was one on Saturday night on NBC. I forget.
It was a good matchup, but not a great game.
Yeah, I expected to be a great matchup, but it was actually entertaining to watch what was going on. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know that I've ever seen such a dominant beatdown of a top 10 team in my life. And being there to just to watch it, it was,
yeah.
I mean, it was Indiana. The biggest question I had about Indiana coming into the season was their defensive line. And if that's what it's going to be like, that question is more than answered, because they looked like the old Pittsburgh Steelers steel curtain back in the day, man. It was unbelievable. They were in Luke Ottmeyer's face all night, sacked him 7 times, 10 tackles for loss. Indiana's defense is right where it was statistically last year, being one of the tops in the country, leading the country in tackles for loss, one of the top teams allowing fewest rushing yards per game. Brian Haynes has done a masterful job.
Oh, they were fantastic on Saturday night in every way a football team can excel, Jim. They were phenomenal. And I expected them to have a great shot at winning. I have great respect for Illinois and Brett Bielema and the program, and I expected it to be very competitive. I was very eager to watch that game. But what Indiana was able to do took my breath away. I think the line, I looked this up because I wrote about the game on the way in and talked about how it was a point of pride for Indiana to be ranked 19th and still favored by 6.5 points or so. So, I mean, they blew away that margin. It just a fantastic performance. Fernando Mendoza is now topping the charts on all the mock drafts. That was a pretty quick transition, and it says a lot about what a great coach Kurt Cignetti is, that he was able to bring in a very fine talent. I watched Fernando play in person a year ago. He played here at Pitt with Cal against Pitt, and I thought, I didn't see in him what I saw on Saturday night. Not that it wasn't, he's not talented, but the proficiency, the explosion, what they were able to do. I did not anticipate any of that on Saturday. And it's interesting, because it's one thing to not anticipate it. It's another thing to not appreciate it, Jim. How do you watch that? Come on. How do you watch that and then rank the team 11th? And this is why I try to tell everybody not to pay attention to the polls, not just early in the season, but ever. How do you rank that 11th? I mean, you can't be serious. Like, you sat there and you watched that and you said, yeah, that's 11th. I mean, that's it's just trash. And I defend the poll's right to exist, because it's a free press. And that's what press is supposed to do, is do what they, you know, cover the sport the way they want. And the AP has been doing the poll since 1936. Great. But I can tell you it's trash, even though I defend their right to do it.
Yeah. And I understand that there's a lot of great teams out there yet. And the only spot, honestly, that I would say, man, that's ridiculous. I think they should have been one spot higher, because they're behind Texas.
Well, yeah, but why should they be behind Florida State? Because Florida State beat Alabama?
Well, because I understand people are still waiting to see if that was now they're wondering how bad. What is Illinois really like?
But that's exactly what they do. Why don't they wonder how bad Alabama is? Why don't you just watch the game and then judge based on the performance? Like, Indiana didn't play anybody the first 3 weeks. I don't think anybody's arguing about that. But they went out and played a team that had been previously judged to be top 10 and that brought a lot of really capable players back from a year ago. And they blew them off the field. They didn't just win. If they just won, I wouldn't be complaining about 11. I wouldn't even have noticed. But with what we saw, you have to judge what you've seen and that achievement. It doesn't make any sense to then rank them behind Florida State and some others. Does it make sense to rank them behind Ohio State? Yeah, because Ohio State beat a team that probably is more talented. And might end up having a better year than Illinois. But to some of the stuff with the brand stuff, so much of this is about brand, Jim. And it's why Indiana was harangued last year for making the playoff, for losing their two most difficult games, as if just about, I mean, like, of the teams that played college football at the Division I FBS level last year, I think there were 136. I could be off on that number, maybe one or two, because it does fluctuate from year to year. Like, 134 of them would have lost at Ohio State and at Notre Dame. Those were the two teams that played the deepest into the playoffs last year. So why is it so? Why do they deserve to be harangued for losing those two games? And now you come back and you say, okay, play a ranked team in the regular season. Okay, we'll play number 9, and then we'll win by 100. Okay, well, that's not good enough. And it just, it all becomes an exercise in absurdity, Jim. And the one thing that I will say about, and we can use last year's circumstance as a guide, is that the committee, now that they have the breadth to deal with, they don't have to gerrymander it in so that the TV ratings are great. They're going to get everybody in that can play now with 12 teams. And then, so then they can adequately judge and honestly judge who deserves to be ranked where. And I thought that last year's ranking, final ranking, not the seedings, because the format was broken, now repaired, but the final rankings were fair, Jim. You could quibble, but you couldn't look at it and say, how do you rank this team 11th when they just won by 100 against a top 10 team?
Yeah, there are some. I was going through the polls yesterday and kind of going backwards and looking, and I don't want to like to call some people out, but I had Brett McMurphy on with us not too long ago, and I guess not a believer in Indiana, because he did not have them ranked for 3 weeks prior to the Illinois beatdown. They were not even on his top 25.
Maybe he was objecting to the schedule. I don't know. But what did he have?
Oh, he definitely was, but it doesn't matter. That shouldn't matter. You should base on what you think that they are.
I think it's fair to judge on performance. I don't know what I would have done if I were doing it, but I refused to vote in the AP poll for more than 30 years now. I've never been asked in football, but I've turned it down enough in basketball that they no longer ask. But I always judged on performance. So I'm okay with not ranking the first 3 weeks, because they chose to play that schedule. But then they played that team and they played the way they did. So now you have to rank them honestly. What was that win worth? Well, a lot of other teams played a lot of nobodies. I mean, I mentioned Florida State because they played Alabama. Okay, good test. And then two nobodies. Well, okay, but Alabama versus Illinois, I don't know. They're about the same, but one team won by 17 points and the other one, I mean, I keep saying 100. I don't even remember what the margin was now. It was more than 50, right? The win over Illinois. What was the final margin of that, Jim?
The final margin of that game?
Yes.
What was it? 63-10.
Yeah, so it was 53 points. So, yeah. I mean, how is that win not worth more than a win over Alabama? I don't get it. It doesn't.
Oh, it should be.
That's what I'm saying. And that's why this is a preposterous exercise. It there's no value to it. And that's why I'm glad we have the expanded football playoff, because now the committee goes in there and they have the automatic bids, and then they have to judge the other 7 teams to put in there. And they're not going to get it right all the way every time. But I thought they did a pretty good job last year. I thought they got it right last year. As more leagues go to this model of 9 regular season games plus 1 against a P4, we'll have a better way to judge the teams, and they'll get even more accurate. The metrics will be more accurate. The metrics will be more accurate. The judgments of the metrics will be more accurate. The assessments of what teams have accomplished will be based on more. One of the interesting things to me about, though, the way these narratives are processed, Jim, is now everybody's yelling at the Big Ten now that the ACC has adopted the 9+1 model that the SEC did two or three weeks ago. Now everybody's yelling at the Big Ten like they weren't the first ones to play nine games in the first place. Like they were 5 years ahead of everybody in playing nine conference games. And now they're being told you need to catch up. Well, I agree that they need to catch up, but let's not pretend they weren't the leader for the previous 4 years. Yeah, I think the Big Ten now needs to do this. And I think it'll hurt them if they don't.
Oh, I
it'll
agree.
Hurt them if they don't. I think, like, right now, I went through it before the year began, and out of 18 Big Ten teams, I think about half played a P4 somewhere in that neighborhood. So it's only about half that are going to have to be told, so to speak. But they do need to do it. So whether they make it a proclamation or just whisper in everybody's ear, hey, you got to do this. We don't want to look like we're following, but you got to do this. And everybody shows up.
And I keep asking, how quickly does that's got to come? Because the SEC starts next year, the ACC's, not everybody in the ACC, it looks like, is going to go to nine games immediately. Yeah. There are a certain number of them, but they're all playing 10 P4 teams regardless. So that is a kind of that makes up for it in a way until they get there. It seems like, and I understand, there are some teams that don't want to pay $1 million buyout to cancel a game if they don't have to, if it fits within the framework of playing 10 P4 teams, which, right. I'm fine with. We're going to be on the same page. But the SEC kind of did shove it to the Big Ten, to be honest with you, because they were getting tired of being lambasted about not playing nine games.
Yes.
Kurt Cignetti saying, we're just going to use the SEC model. And then the SEC, not only did they come back with a nine, but said, I'll see your nine, and I'm going to raise it a P4 game requirement as well.
Yes.
So now I'm waiting to see how long it takes for the Big Ten to respond to that, because that's scheduling that you've got to get to now if you're going to do this for next season.
Yeah, I mean, it shouldn't be that hard to accomplish, because remember, with a lot of these teams, they have, now that they're mandating these things, they have to catch up in some instances. So it's all catching up together. But if you sit on the sideline on this for too long, maybe they all sort of find a way to exclude you or whatever. But I think if Big Ten teams want to play P4 opponents, I don't think that they'll get much quarrel from teams in the ACC, for instance. I think the ACC would welcome the opportunity to play Big Ten teams. Same with the Big 12. And of course, if you play the SEC, all the better, because then you get, as is the case in the college basketball, like if this has been true for very many years, Jim, if I am Indiana, let's just use, and then I play Auburn and I beat Auburn. And so I get that win, but then I kind of get whatever Auburn does in the SEC, and the SEC's this past year was the best league in college basketball. So that kind of helps me along in order to boost my metrics, my resume, and ultimately my chances of being selected to the NCAA tournament. So there's a lot to be gained for the Big Ten if they schedule those high quality games, especially against the SEC, to a lesser extent, the Big 12, and to a lesser extent, the ACC, with the way things have been lining up in football over the past few years.
I had your buddy, colleague, Bill Bender on last week.
He's the best.
He was super, super great. I really enjoyed it. First time I got to meet him, talk to him. Cyber meet, I guess you'd say. But
yes,
you feel like you've met somebody when you do it this way, at least. So, well, it's like I see you maybe once or twice a year in reality.
Yeah.
He was super great. And he seems to be more of a middle of the road thinker. He doesn't, he's not swayed to the SEC. He's not swayed by this, that. And I'm serious. He seems like one of the few national pundits that has just been open to what's going on. I may have told him that. I'm not sure. I don't remember. But that's from reading his stuff and looking. That's what I get. He's one of the people that already has Indiana penciled into the college football playoffs now. It's funny. Boy, what a difference a week makes. Now, all of a sudden, you're in the college football playoffs, and your quarterback is the second highest shot to win the Heisman by Vegas now. He wasn't even on anybody's list a week ago.
Yeah, who's ahead of him? Mateer, is that?
Yes, but
okay.
Kirk Herbstreit is like almost leading a parade for John Mateer. If you listen every Saturday on college football, on college game day, he is raving about Mateer, and I'm sure he's a good quarterback, but I'm like, well, slow your roll, brother. He's not like coming out like Johnny Unitas here or something. Things work out. Just like the polls, they're going to work themselves out. Yeah. Indiana is going to Iowa this week. Then they go to Oregon the week after that. Man, this is a tough two-game stretch coming up for Indiana. And it is going to be some great football to watch, because I've been thinking that Oregon is the number one team possibly in the country. I don't know that. I don't know how good Ohio State really is. We're still too early.
Yeah.
So it's hard to imagine who's what. Now, Bill does have Texas in there, and I'm like, there's no way I see them climbing out of that SEC. I think there are just so many teams in the SEC that are better than Texas from what I've seen.
Well, but Texas could get better, Jim. I mean,
absolutely. Look,
Arch Manning was really poor in the Ohio State game. It was a lot to ask of him in his first – it's not his first collegiate start, but his first game as the full-time starter. It was a lot to ask, and he didn't step up to it. And then he didn't play well his second week either. He played better this past week. It was a poor opponent. But players get better. I mean, absolutely. We've seen – and he's a he's obviously a talented guy. So we don't know what Texas will be in a month, but we know what we learn each week. And you mentioned Oregon as a team that you really respect or fear. I don't know if fear is the right word or not, but they'll play at Penn State on Saturday night in about as difficult a home field environment as you can get, with that whiteout thing that they do. And they do a spectacular job with that scene. And so now how does the game play out? That's the question. And it's a big one for Penn State. It's a big one for Oregon, because Oregon in their circumstance has to do that. And you mentioned the stretch for Indiana. They go Illinois at Iowa at Oregon. And then, of course, in Oregon's case, they've got to go to Penn State. And then not long after that, play the Hoosiers. So that's a difficult stretch for them as well. What's interesting about that, Jim, is that we're seeing what has always been presumed about the SEC, and not incorrectly except for last season, that they have been a powerful conference, really deep in great teams. And they may be that again, but you're seeing now that the Big Ten is making up some of that ground. And they did it at the top the last couple of years with Michigan and Ohio State winning it all. But it's more than that. It's Indiana and Illinois and Iowa and obviously Penn State, which has always been kind of on that next tier. And then we see USC coming on, and maybe like USC is that team that no one's talking about. Washington.
Oh, trust me. Yeah. There's somebody that they have a great offense. They've got a good coach, obviously. And there's someone to watch out for. This week, Indiana, they go to Iowa, which tough place to play.
Right.
Period. Yes. Always has been, always will be, for a number of reasons. Number one, because Iowa loves their football. Their fans love their football. They've got great fans. It is one of the best college football environments that I've been to. And it's just a tremendous, and you want to talk about culture. They've got defensive culture. It's going to be a physical game and a great test. And if you come out of there with a win, great win. But then when you go to Oregon, there's something about that travel, Mike, that we have seen, even though that it's not supposed to really do anything, it works both ways. Yeah. Teams that we've seen have to come all the way back and then go the opposite way. I forget the stat, but the Big Ten teams that have to travel three time zones, they don't fare. The record is not good.
Well, I think that's true, but it's also, when you think about it, I mean, like a year ago, Indiana went out to UCLA and did what it should have done to UCLA, and given the state of the two programs at the time. So I think some of that is, like, right now, you're looking at a team in SC that's really talented, a team in Oregon that's really talented, and a team in Washington that's probably more dangerous than they were a year ago, and we'll learn a lot more about them as well this weekend when they have the Buckeyes at home. That's a prime game. So I think that the travel thing is still an issue, but I don't, especially in football, I think it's really more about who's going where than about how much they're traveling to get there. Like, what sort of team is showing up on what sort of, like, as daunting as the challenge is to go to Penn State, for instance, on Saturday night. And Penn State's as tough to travel to as any team in this league because of where it's located, right in the center of the state. It's difficult to reach. I mean, you can get a plane in there because teams charter in there all the time. But there's no obvious, there's no big city right nearby or whatever. So it does take a challenge. We'll see Saturday night, but I don't think anybody's going to be shocked if Oregon goes in there and wins. They're too good, and even with the travel, I just don't think that's the challenge. I think the challenge is Penn State, which is a terrific team, and the atmosphere, which is going to be electric, and the stakes of the game. So I think the travel can impact teams in different sports depending on how it's managed. I think the Big Ten has tried to do a good job with that in the sports like basketball, men's basketball, women's basketball, where they try to get them on a couple games. If they go, if you come to Indiana, you play Purdue, or you come to Indiana, play Northwestern or whatever. If you go to Southern California, you're not just playing UCLA and jetting home. You're playing both them and the Trojans. So I think the travel is a challenge, but I don't think that it's been as much a factor in the competition as maybe some would project.
Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News with us right now. We'll take a quick break here at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Back with more right after these messages.
Welcome back to Indiana Sports Beat Radio on this Tuesday. Thank you so much for being with us. Jim Coyle here in the chair, and our good friend Mike DeCourcy with us.
Big surprise for me yesterday was to see Bruce Pearl retire as the coach at Auburn. Timing is really weird as the school year has already started, and I don't know if this was kind of a move to ensure his son got the position, which it sure seems that way. He's not the first coach to do that, but a little surprising.
That would be my read on it, honestly. The fact that he left isn't surprising. There's been a lot of conversation in the basketball world about the idea of him running for the Senate seat that I think Tommy Tuberville either has said he will vacate, or everybody expects him to vacate so he can run for governor of Alabama. And so there's been a lot of conversation about that. So we all sort of figured it was a matter of time. We didn't necessarily, given that he had said on a few occasions that he didn't think that he was going to leave. I think he did drag it. I think it's fair to wonder that if he dragged it to this point so that it could assure Stephen would be installed. But even at that, I mean, we can speculate at that. But Auburn subsequently announced that Stevens been installed with a 5-year contract. Now, what the details of that contract are, I'm not sure. But they obviously are committing to him for the near term, not just for the 25-26 season, but for the near term. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean all 5 years. They're going to have to perform, but they were able to keep the roster in place. Now, the players can leave now if they want, because that's the rule. I mean, obviously, you wouldn't walk out of a school in mid-semester, but they could decide not to play if they wanted, and transfer at the break, or they could leave now. Like I said, it wouldn't make much sense to do that in October or in September, but I think that it does set Steven up to have a chance. I mean, Tahad Pettiford's a great player to start with, the guard from New Jersey. It was such a big part of last year's Final Four team. They lost a huge number of their better players from that Final Four team. Eligibility expiring for Jani Broome, for instance. Some other players transferred out. But it'll be very interesting to see what transpires for Auburn this season with Bruce gone.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how that all works itself out as we get closer and closer. They're not that far away, man. Indiana's got a very busy October of all kinds of things going on. And, man, it won't be long. College basketball will be here, and we'll be doing double duty as the college football season will be right in the throes of its the meet schedule. As now these games each week will be – there's always going to be great games because now we're in conference play. And just like this week, there are a ton of great games to check out, whether it's USC coming to Illinois, buddy, they're on the snide here. They lose this game. That's going to be a bad blow to them. And I'm going to be surprised if they don't lose that game. Their offensive line is just mush. And USC is a pretty potent offensive team. So, but there's many others, whether it's in the SEC as well. There are plenty of other great games coming along this weekend. I think Alabama and Georgia are lined up this weekend. So there's plenty to get going, man. And that's the best part of the season we've been waiting on for all these different games. Indiana basketball. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's just what you just mentioned, and I mentioned before the Penn State game and the Ohio State out at Washington. What I can't say enough, and I think it's worth repeating this, how much better college football is as a sport because of the fact that the tournament expanded to 12 teams. It just has completely changed the landscape. All those games that you mentioned matter now, all of them. And even the, you know, like Texas now, when they play Oklahoma, it's not just about the rivalry. It's not just about messing up Oklahoma's drive, but you're still in it. I mean, even though you lost your first game, you're still in it. So it just, I have refallen in love with college football over the last 2 years. I've always enjoyed watching the teams that I grew up with, or that my wife liked, or whatever it was, and enjoying the game. But now I really love the sport again, the way I did when I was younger and didn't understand how dumb it was to vote for a champion. Now they play it out on the field, and it's just been fantastic.
It absolutely has been. It has been a blast. It has just rising tide raises all ships, and that's what we have seen. Andrew mentioned my Reds. Oh, your Reds back in the potential playoff spot, man. They are in a last few games battle with the New York Mets as tied for that last.
No, they're not tied. Playoff spot. They are not.
Oh, they're up a game.
They are. Their records are equivalent, but the tiebreaker.
But the Reds have the tiebreaker. That's right.
The tiebreaker is season series. It's not a one game. There will not be a one game playoff to have a one game playoff. It's so the tiebreaker is season series. I loved My friend Brian Gieschenschlag on the Reds television network saying that they control their destiny. So what that means is they have to win all the rest of their games and they're in, which, I mean, like, controlling your destiny when you're an NFL team with week 17 coming up is one thing, but controlling your destiny when you have to win every baseball game in a week, I got a chuckle out of that. He's 100% right. Not inaccurate at all, but it is funny that in order to deliver on that control, you have to win every single game. But it is to the Reds' advantage, obviously, that they have the season series over the Mets. And so they begin this next week, tonight, against the Pirates. They begin this with the knowledge that all they have to do is tie. The Mets have to beat them. If they tie, they win. If they win, they win, obviously. And the Mets have to finish ahead of them in order to get the bid. So I think it's been, you know, it's been a frustrating season for the Reds because they have, I mean, very few winning streaks. I bet they haven't had a winning streak longer than six games, Jim. And they haven't had any long losing streaks either. But they've hung in there. They're very well managed by Terry Francona. If they get them some more good players for next year, I think they'll be dangerous. It's tough to be a Cincinnati in Major League Baseball with the way it's set up. But Terry Francona being out there and the Reds being smart enough to jump on it. My wife was shopping a month or a month and a half ago, and she got out. She had a piece of Reds gear that one of the salespeople said, "You stole our manager." And Deb right away said, "You didn't want him. He was sitting there. He's a Pittsburgh guy. You could have had him. And what did you do? You didn't do a thing. So it's your fault in Pittsburgh that you didn't hire him. The Reds were smart enough to jump on him. He's a Hall of Fame manager, and having him on the bench certainly doesn't hurt."
Well, speaking of the last few games, the Mets are on the road for all their remaining games, and that begins at Chicago.
At Chicago.
Where the Reds just swept the Cubs in a four-game series, unbelievably. They're on a five-game heater right now, having won five in a row. Then now and tonight, they take on your beloved Pittsburgh Pirates for a three-game set.
Well, I wrote an article. I don't know if you know this, Jim, but I wrote an article in 2013 about how and why I defected from the Pirates to the Reds. We lived in Cincinnati for 18 years, and my wife, during the construction of Great American Ballpark and the implosion of Synergy Field, Riverfront Stadium, she was the communications lead for that project.
Yeah, you told me that. I forgot.
Yes. That was one of her big deals. She organized the opening of Great American Ballpark and handled all the PR for the construction project and all of that. And she loved working with the people who were at the Reds then. And they gradually just became really important to her. And she is of the two of us, she's the bigger baseball fan. So she wins on that. And I also wrote, you know, that when you're in a place, I mean, gosh, it's a third of my life. You want to take something from that, right? So we brought the Pacers along and the Fever along from Indiana. And we took the Reds, even though we had to displace an old favorite.
Well, looking forward to it. Let's hope that they can squeeze in there. Yes. Make sure you are giving Mike DeCourcy a follow and following all of his content at The Sporting News. Appreciate you, my friend, as always.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, sir. Hey, we've got more coming up. Steve Wolfong joins us a little later. We're back after these messages. Welcome back. Indiana Sports Speed Radio coming to you on this Tuesday. Glad to have you along as we're getting some fall-like weather as we have had nothing but sunshine and beautiful temperatures for quite some time now. But today, expecting a little more rain in at least around this area, 81 degrees for a high, and then sticking around those temperatures for here on out, at least as far as I can see. not sure what it's going to be like. What's it going to be like in Iowa this weekend? That'll be interesting to see. But Indiana's next challenge comes in Iowa City at Kinnick Stadium as they'll take on the Iowa Hawkeyes, led by the Big Ten's all-time leading coach, Kirk Ferentz, in a game that Indiana, of course, needs to win. They need to win them all. Well, not all of them, but as many as possible. This is a place that Indiana went to a few years back with a lot of hopes. And unfortunately, it did not come to fruition back then. They had Michael Penix and a few others, but this is a different time. And looking forward to Indiana rolling on, as they will then follow that up with a bye week. And then they will travel to Eugene, Oregon for a gigantic game in the Big Ten, because depending upon whether Oregon beats Penn State this weekend, whom that's the biggest game in college football, Oregon, if Oregon wins, they'll still be ranked in the top five. Indiana's going to be ranked in the top 10 by the time that they play. So that's going to be a gigantic, gigantic matchup. And it's better for Indiana, I think, or for Oregon to win that game. But we'll see how it all plays out at the end of the year, because you're possibly going to have some ties in the Big Ten with 11-1 teams or whatnot, with the schedules all mixed up. It'll be interesting to see who winds up at the top. I'll be honest, at the beginning of the year, I gave Indiana zero chance to go to Oregon and win, and Penn State. But Saturday sure changed my mind. Now, you can't let that change everything, because Illinois is obviously not as good as people thought. And that's the thing. It's what people thought. They didn't beat anybody heading into the Indiana game. Duke was not, they're one of the weaker ACC teams, and probably should have lost that game, and would have had Duke not turned the ball over 1,000 times in the second half. So Iowa's going to be 85 degrees. That'll be a great day. Afternoon game starts in the afternoon, which means that'll probably be on CBS, I'm assuming. I haven't looked ahead at that on the TV, but just by the time, I will assume that's what it's going to be like. But been quite some time since Indiana's won at Iowa, but it's been quite some time since Indiana's been doing a lot of the things that they have done. And I expect that to continue to roll. This team just has a different look. Kurt Cignetti seems to be more locked in. He seems to be less flippant and just really locked in. I think he knows what he has. Not that he didn't know last year, but he's got a better opportunity this year. And he wants to show the world what the Hoosiers are having, as that game is on Peacock, actually. Not CBS. So if you don't have Peacock, you're going to have to get it. You're going to have to pull that up. No, I had not mentioned anything about the Fever, but they are rolling as well. What a time for Indiana sports right now. And you got the Hoosiers, you got the Colts, the Fever. Probably throw Notre Dame in there, that are all playing extraordinarily well. You're coming off of the Pacers having an incredible, incredible season, that one that they won't be able to duplicate, obviously, without Tyrese Halliburton this upcoming season. But right now, the Fever, they blow out the Aces in the first game of that series, 89-73, after winning their series over the Atlanta Dream, 2-1, and two of those wins on the road. against the Dream. That's pretty strong. And again, in addition to the fact that they're doing this without six players, minus six of their players, Caitlin Clark and another starter or two, that's crazy. I don't understand how a team that loses the potency that they lost can still beat these other teams. I don't even know what to say. I don't follow the WNBA a lot, I'll be honest with you, but just from a sports mindset, you're like, how's that work? But hey, the Fever reaching down, man, and finding ways to get it done. So hopefully that continues for them. Indiana football has rocketed into everyone's attention now. There are many people that now are placing them in the college football playoff projections. Fernando Mendoza goes from being not on anybody's Heisman list, which was a joke, to I don't know if where he is on people's polls, but no one cares. Vegas has him as, I think, the second highest odds to win the Heisman. Right now it's behind with John Mateer from Oklahoma. He stood out in the early stages, but you should jump on no one in the first four or five games. First of all, you're going to have a bunch of putz games in there. So now, as the conference games start to play, yeah, you start to see who's there. And there's a lot of good players out there. But without question, Fernando Mendoza, and I know a couple of people that put preseason bets on him to win the Heisman. And one of those would pay extraordinarily well. Hey, before I forget, ran into Tim Gaughan last night. He was kind enough to have they had a dinner engagement, and had me out to dinner with him, and met Professor Eric from the Kelly School of Business, because they were having a meeting of the minds. Minds that exceeded my intellectual capabilities, obviously, but I was there for, I don't even know why. I'm like, why am I here? I'm the dumbest guy at the table, without question. Ty Simpson, the quarterback at Alabama, one of the guys, if the voting happened today, a loss to Florida State would probably keep him out of the conversation. Well, he's got plenty of time to make that up. They play Georgia this week. Julian Sayin from Ohio State, quiet performance in the victory over Texas, but he's at the helm of the number one team in the country. That just buys you points, because unfortunately this award has become being the best player on the best team. It's not just being the best player in college football as it was designed to be and should have been. It's how it is in my mind, at least. Jaden Maiva, quarterback from USC. He's thrown for 1,200 yards, chipped in 55 rushing yards, and totals 13 touchdowns in four USC wins. Now he's got to maintain that as they move forward. Carson Beck, of course, he's doing a pretty good job guiding the Miami offense. But his numbers are not extraordinarily flashy. Former Indiana commit Josh Hoover, quarterback at TCU, having a solid yard. He's already passed for 1,000 yards, 11 touchdowns. Marcel Reed from Texas A&M. Gunnar Stockton, quarterback at Georgia, of course, because he's the quarterback at Georgia. But he had a good win in the game over Tennessee, totaling 342 yards and three touchdowns. Jeremiah Smith, the wide receiver from Ohio State, many consider one of the, if not the best player in college football. Joey Aguiar, from the quarterback from Tennessee. Man, if he'd have won that game against Georgia, that would have done a lot more for him. He's thrown for 1,100 yards and 12 touchdowns. Then we get to the three favorites, or I guess you'd say the top three at the moment. Fernando Mendoza. During an easy non-conference slate, Fernando Mendoza padded his stats with 10 touchdowns. Good, necessary work, but his word, oh, but my word, a 21 of 23 showing with 267 yards, 5 scores, and 0 turnovers in the 63-10 over ninth-ranked Illinois. That's incredible stuff. Mendoza has soared into contention as the Hoosiers head to Iowa, aiming to avoid a letdown game. Yeah, I don't see Indiana having letdowns. Not under Kurt Cignetti, which maybe eventually that does happen, but they just seem to have this mentality week in, week out, game in, game out, and I don't see that happening. John Mateer, the quarterback at Oklahoma, has been steady in every game so far. He's thrown for 270-plus yards and accounted for a touchdown, both as a passer and runner. Most importantly, two of those victories were over Michigan and Auburn. So he's got the two best wins, I guess you'd say. They're against ranked opponents. Oklahoma is idle before hosting Kent State to open October. Kent State. Ooh, wow. Kent State. And then you've got Dante Moore at Oregon. So in a few weeks, we're going to have a Heisman candidate on Heisman candidate matchup in Indiana and Oregon lock up. But looking for a statement game from Dante Moore, question mark. His chance arrives this weekend when Oregon plays at number 3 Penn State in a raucous whiteout environment. Moore, who's passed for 962 yards and 11 scores to one interception, is tasked with handling a PS Penn State secondary that faced a painless non-conference run, has surrendered a measly 4.6 yards per attempt. So there's the lineup for Heisman hopefuls that are coming up this weekend. Who puts on the best performance? I think that Fernando is going to have another good weekend. I just think that Indiana is such a complete team. Kind of crazy. I mean, I was looking through, I spent a long time yesterday looking through the NCAA stats, and it's just like last year for Indiana on team stats, offensively or defensively, they are very, very high. Third down conversion rate, Indiana's third in the country. But that's, you want to, and their percentage, they're third in the country. How about defense on third down? They're second in the country. How about those apples? What else was completion percentage? Fernando is number 3 in the country. Indiana as a team has rushed for the most yards as anybody in the country. I think Fernando has he thrown for the most? I don't recall. But it just blows my mind to see how many statistical categories Indiana is up high in on both sides of the ball. First downs defense, Indiana, number two. First downs offense, Indiana's number one. I mean, this is just going down the line on statistics that are on both sides. We've got lots more coming up. Steve Wiltfong is going to join us next. We'll hit the break, and hopefully he'll be with us when we return. Back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, here on this Tuesday. Joined now by our good friend Steve Wiltfong from On Three. How are you, sir? I think you're muted.
You got me now.
I got you now, my friend.
I am excited to be on. How about that ass kicking in Memorial Stadium on Saturday night? The Hoosiers undefeated, looking like a playoff team for a second year in a row. I feel all the excitement up here in Zionsville, Indiana, from IU alum. My friends are texting me, got some families that go to all the games. It's an exciting time, man.
Man, I wish that I wasn't in the press box the whole time, because you can't get a feel of what all was going out there. And I heard that the environment was just crazy the entire time, with the new record, I think 55,000 for Memorial Stadium, Merchants Bank there at Field at Memorial Stadium. But it was mesmerizing to see that domination. But the domination for me was defensively. It was just like watching a very, very high-end college football team dismantle one that wasn't.
Well, the cohesiveness of this Indiana football coaching staff, obviously it starts with Coach Cignetti, but you have arguably the two best coordinators in college football in Bloomington right now, Coach Shanahan, Coach Haynes. And this is a football team that ranks number two nationally in total offense. They can really run the football. Number three in rushing offense, number three in scoring offense, number three in total defense, number five in scoring defense. They really can stop the pass. They're good against the run. They're efficient on the money downs. Not many money downs on offense. That's first down, second down, first down again. But on defense, they get off the field on third down. And this program just has an attitude, right? It takes on the identity, the personality of the head coach. They are confident every time they have the rock. They think they're going to go up and down the field and put it in the end zone. And then defensively, they hit hard. But more than anything, this is an assignment-driven football team. They are prepared. And because of how prepared they are, they play confident. They play fast. And Coach Cignetti and the staff, they get the most out of their players. And they're going up to Iowa. The locker room is going to be pink, but it doesn't matter. This is going to be a team that is going to run out of the tunnel, and they're going to be a real problem for the Hawkeyes. Now, I'll say this. Iowa scored some points last week. It was pretty surprising to watch them put the ball in the end zone. They were a team, it almost, to me, before last week, I would have said Bill Walsh could be their offensive coordinator and they would find a way to only score 14 points. So they did find a way to score some points last week. But I think this is a tough matchup for Iowa with just how prolific Indiana is on offense and then just how stout they are on defense. And so this team, when you lose a guy like Rourke last year, just the toughness that he had, the injury he played through, but how smart he was with the football pre-snap. He knew how to get in the right protection. He knew where his danger zones were, knew how to take care of the football, played with great confidence, but was obviously limited by the injury. You didn't know how Mendoza would step in here and be able to lead this football team, because there were big shoes to fill. And I don't think people realized how big those shoes were to fill until after the season, when you realized what Rourke played through. But obviously Indiana has gotten him plugged in here, plug and play. And this football team looks better than they did last year, more dynamic, more weapons. And then again, on defense, they're a real problem. And they beat up on my boy, Kurt Mallory, Coach Mallory in the Sycamores. That was a tough day. And then kept it rolling against Coach Bielema in Illinois. And look, I know Illinois is a team that's, we'll see how they bounce back from this game, because this is a soul-taking loss. They're a team that I think would get better throughout the year if they can bounce back from this loss, because I think Coach Bielema is a good football coach. But Indiana came into the season ready to play. First snap, first quarter of game one. In Illinois, they're a team that won the Citrus Bowl last year, beat a good South Carolina team, won 10 games for the first time. All the expectations that they had coming into the year with their quarterback coming back were fair. They just aren't playing well. And sometimes teams believe in their press clippings and they are anointed. And here we are. We're a top 10 team. They say we're a top 10 team. We're good. And it takes the edge off. And for Indiana, making the college football playoff last year, you could have said the same thing. But this is a team that came out ready to play. They weren't living on last year. They weren't living off of that historic campaign that IU had a year ago. This was a team that came back hungry, ready to play. And here you go.
Yeah, I'm looking at the bet lines from BetMGM. Indiana is a 7.5-point favorite on the road at Iowa, which always
the home team gets 3 points. That means they think IU would only beat Iowa by 10 in Memorial Stadium.
What's in Kinnick? It's on the road.
No, I know. I'm saying that they would only give IU. They would give IU just plus 10 in Memorial Stadium. I think I like those odds.
Yeah, all day long and twice on college football Saturday.
Look, the Big Ten's the best conference in college football, and there's some really good coaches, and Kirk Ferentz is one of them. And one thing that Iowa's going to be is prepared for this game, but I don't know if they match up. They'll be prepared. They'll have a good game plan. They'll play hard. They'll be physical at the line of scrimmage, so there'll be some challenges for Indiana that they haven't yet seen, and it's a really good opponent for IU here as they continue to prepare for what's to come, because obviously the goal for them is to win the Big Ten championship
and a great test, because Indiana is going to be going up against a team that is well coached, that is known for having just stout defense year in, year out. Offensively, I'm a little surprised that they're not a little bit more open when they brought in the quarterback from South Dakota State, who had thrown for 10,000 yards in 2 years, but he's kind of handcuffed a bit right now and not getting to open that offense up. And man, if you're not scoring points, you're not going to beat Indiana, I don't think.
That's what I'm saying. There's something in the – like Bill Walsh himself, or name a good offensive coordinator or offensive mind or a game changer in that lane, and it'd be hard to score at Iowa. But they scored last week, so they seem to have maybe figured some things out. And I didn't watch every play of the Rutgers-Iowa game because I was out watching New Palestine. Talk about a team that can score some
points. New pal, baby. New pal.
There is not a better high school coach in the country than Kyle Ralph, and I am not just throwing out a statement because he lives an hour from me. Dude, 1 year when they went to the state championship, was the offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator, and he's the strength coach for the entire school. He played offensive line at North Carolina. He's from Cincinnati St. Xavier. A college coach should scoop Kyle Ralph up, make him the offensive line coach, and then he would be off and running. But he, you know, he's obviously a fabulous coach. New Palestine lucked out into getting him. He just married a new pal girl, and it timed up that they needed a head coach. The stars aligned for him to end up at New Pal. New Pal is a good hard-nosed program, but obviously now they're one of the best teams in the state. I think they're one of the top two teams regardless of class with Brownsburg this year. So I was watching New Pal on Friday night, and they were putting on an offensive clinic. And then you watch IU on Saturday, and it's just a clinic on both sides of the ball. And so it's a fun time for football in the Hoosier State. Obviously, Peyton Manning gets a lot of credit for helping the community take off. All these programs have great facilities now at these high schools to train in year-round. And what Coach Cignetti's doing at Indiana is unbelievable. And it just goes to show you, football is an attitude sport, and it is a team sport, and it is a scheme sport. And Coach Cignetti brought the right attitude to Indiana. They got the right scheme, and they got the right culture, and the kids are playing hard, and they came out this season ready to play, and Illinois came out this season slow. And they were able to escape some games, so those kids still maybe believed in their press clippings, but they got to Indiana, and they ran into a buzzsaw. And so now Indiana, like every team that's writing their own story, it's a new year, they have to go play Iowa now, and you got to take care of the football against Iowa. They're going to give you some exotic looks on defense that they probably haven't seen this year. Coach Parker is one of the best defensive coordinators in college football, has been for a long time. And Indiana has to bounce back from this win too. We talk about how's Illinois going to bounce back. Indiana's got to bounce back. Now, under Coach Cignetti, they've always been ready to play. So you're confident that they're going to be able to do that, but it's still part of the story, right? So they got to go out and write the next chapter. Chapter 5, you just got to get a win. And not every chapter, you don't have to win every game by 40 or 50. It's a lot of fun, but college football, just win. And talking to some people around the Oregon program, again, this is the best conference in college football. And I think they're excited about Indiana being good because now they get a good home game. An extra good home game, right? Two top. Now they got to go handle business at Penn State, but that could be a hell of a game up there in Eugene in 2 weeks. Coach Kurt Cignetti, Coach Dan Lanning, a new age coach. Coach Lanning is a new age coach, one of the best young coaches.
He is the top in the country.
I mean, the way he pours into all details of the program. Coach Cignetti, obviously an elder statesman that people didn't know about because of the jobs he had beforehand, but always very successful, does it in a different way, his style. But those are two of the best in the country right now. And it'll be interesting to just see how they rub elbows out there. You know, Dan Lanning's one of the nicest guys too, very likable. Kurt Cignetti's obviously this killer personality competitor. I don't know. Oregon, big opportunity on the road at night at Penn State. Penn State, they are not – they win their whiteout games when it's not an elite opponent. We'll see if they can win their whiteout game against an elite opponent here. I think they maybe beat Ohio State. Their one win against Ohio State was a whiteout game. But I've seen them lose to Michigan at night, I believe. I don't know. Maybe I'm misspeaking here. So I'll stop.
I'm gonna take Oregon in that game. I'll be honest with you. I just think that they're a better
team. Penn State's really
good
now. Penn State's really good. Obviously, played in the title game last year. Drew Aller back again. They get after you on defense. They're physical. They're not scared of anybody, and they can really run the football. They got a really good running back room. Always good at tight end. Some of the best offensive line play that James Franklin's had. So. That game will be a war, and then Oregon goes from one war to maybe another, but Indiana's got to get through Iowa and get through being anointed, but I think Coach Cignetti will have them ready to roll.
Oh, absolutely, and it's benefiting in recruiting as we expected that it would, as it does with most teams. Recently, Indiana commit and Grandview Heights prospect Henry Olinger, a four-star recruit, shut his recruitment down, said, all right, I'm done, I'm ready, I'm going to Indiana. And then that's followed up by another big-time commitment for Indiana with the not a commitment. But they had the five-star, number one defensive lineman in the country. And we'll see. As that was a great – and to have him there at that Illinois game Indiana to play as dominantly as they did, that had to bode well for the Hoosiers.
Yeah, no question. I didn't know Henry Olinger was even looking around. I think sometimes our business, we makes – you know, he wasn't looking around. He was always solid in his commitment. We want to – write a story last week saying he's solid in his commitment and it makes everybody feel good. Great. But this Indiana class, I would feel really good about, especially rivals. We're higher on this class than a lot of the industry. Gabe Hill, we have him as a top 150 player in the country. No one else has him as high as us. Cameron McCaney, four-star recruit, defensive lineman. He's from Center Grove, Greenwood, man, down there at IMG Academy playing for the Ascenders. Center Grove, man, there's not very many places where you could play on Friday night in a special atmosphere. But anyway, he's coming back home. He's going to play for the Hoosiers. He's a four-star for us. Obviously, we love Henry Olinger. Could be a big-time running back. He's going to be an excellent linebacker for the Hoosiers, but he could do it all. Rennell Johnson, we're much higher on than the rest of the industry, an edge rusher from Missouri. He's getting some offers from some other programs. Kazmir Hicks, we're higher on than the rest of the industry. Yes, I'm patting ourselves on the back as analysts, but Kurt Cignetti pats himself on the back sometimes, and he should. And we're going to do that with our rankings right now because we're proud of these rankings, and we think, hell, Indiana will get even more out of these guys than even we have them. Right, Trevor Gibbs we're higher on than the industry. Jaden Williams is a linebacker from Massillon, Ohio, that's really starting to take off, that's got some serious traits. When you look up and down this Indiana football class, these guys are just good football players, man. And none of them were like elite blue chip recruits, but had some really good opportunities, some good offers, and they go out and produce on Friday night. There's not a lot of guys in these class in this class that's like a projection, whereas like he's 6'5", 230, but he's got 20 tackles and two sacks, but he's got a little bit of twitch, and we think we can get the best out of him. These guys are ball players, and I think that fits the DNA of what Indiana's looking for, and they do a really good job of evaluating. You got guys like Matty Wilson, who's been in the business a long time, Ferrara in that business, who's worked at a lot of SEC schools. That helps evaluate, and I know there's so many other guys in that building that helps us coaching staff evaluate. And Coach Shanahan, I've run into him on the road recruiting, and sometimes when you are in these group events where there's a bunch of college coaches out there, it's like a convention for some of them. They're just chit-chatting on the sideline, and Shanahan's out on the field watching Brandon Sharp run around and taking video and taking it back to the staff, I would imagine, and they're talking about guys, and they're deciding who they're taking, because you got to be a special individual to play for Coach Cignetti and company. There's a lot of really good football players out there, and recruiting's about who you get, not who you don't get, and making sure that the guys that you get can understand what you are asking of them. Because there's so many moving parts in football. You might be a talented athlete, but if you don't understand what you're doing pre-snap, you can't play. Or then the coaches have to get extra creative to scheme you into the plan because you don't know what the hell's going on. So, but you're athletic enough, and they don't want to leave a great player on the sideline because you don't understand what's going on. There's some coaches that actually do that too. So this Indiana staff is awesome. And it's you know, I've lived in Indiana basically my whole life, except for an excursion in Chicago. And so you follow the football team, and I go back to the Trent Greens of the world, you know, and this is fun. And it's fun to watch, for me, living vicariously through other people, right? For me, college football, you get to know the coaches, you get to know the staff, you know, some of the kids. So you root for people that treat you well, but just seeing the enthusiasm for your friends in the community and that are IU that have went out to the UCLA game last year and poured into the team last year financially with their support. And then certainly this year, how many people were at the game that I knew from my community on Saturday night, and just the excitement on those guys makes it fun.
Yeah, and to see Memorial Stadium like that is just mind-boggling, because generally in the past when that was the case, it was because Michigan or Ohio State brought in a ton of people to fill the stands, but that was not the case. And Indiana's recruiting continues to skyrocket, but it's also Kurt Cignetti is very good at picking guys that fit, that are great fits for him. They may not always be five stars or this, or that, or whatever, but they seem to work. It's a great mixture of guys who are just have that chip on their shoulder.
Right. Well, Coach has his thumb on everything. And even when he got hired, obviously he walked out there at the basketball game and told the fans how it's going to be, but people probably rolled their eyes. And then even early in the season last year, he had to challenge the fans and the students to get their butts to the game. And it takes time, and he knows that, but he was on the gas the whole time. And now they don't have to – the flyover picture of the stadium doesn't have to be at the Ohio State game anymore. You know what I mean? No. Like this team is in full support of – and this community is in full support, and with that comes some expectations, but they're ready for it. And this will be an exciting game on Saturday and another good test – more so for me to just see how they respond to that latest win. And I have all the confidence in the world they're going to play well, but you still want to see it.
Oh, absolutely. And something else I want to ask is Indiana slowly and quietly becoming the new cradle of quarterbacks. Ironically, there's a couple of guys that were not even involved with this staff. But if you look down through some of the NCAA stats, besides Fernando Mendoza, who is obviously crushing it, you've got guys like Brendan Sorsby at Cincinnati, Taven Jackson at Central Florida, both right. Former IU quarterbacks, Josh Hoover, who was a former IU commit, and now you've got Curtis Rourke last year, Fernando right. This year, Alberto, his brother, is probably going to follow in his footsteps very similarly. Kurt Cignetti is going to quickly become known as the quarterback guy.
Well, I remember talking to Coach Sig before last season, before the season kicked off a few weeks before, and they were recruiting Julian Lewis at the time. And I just asked him, he couldn't comment on a prospect just per the rules by name, but right. I just said, what is the sell to a quarterback out of the portal or a blue chip guy on the trail or just the guy you covet? And he's like, look, my last four or five quarterbacks were the conference player of the year, offensive player of the year, and they were different styles of player. So the offense is just built around the skill set of QB1, whoever it is, and then they maximize his abilities and get to put him in position to be successful. So the point is, whoever you are, what you're able to do, they figure it out, and then they build it around you, and then the quarterback has a lot of success. So Indiana, whether it's next year or I honestly don't know how many years of eligibility Mendoza has, but
– well, I don't think he's going to be here next year regardless.
Right. So if they stay internal or go to the portal one more time or whatever – and whoever you're recruiting on the trail, you got to be excited about playing for Coach Cignetti because you know he's going to put you in a scheme to get the best out of you and have you ready to go. And to your point, a guy like Taven Jackson, he probably learned a lot of football last year, you know, and while he was disappointed he didn't win the job, so he went somewhere else, I guarantee it was a good year educationally for him to learn some football last year and learn how a program is run correctly and how you're supposed to prepare for practice games and what it looks like. And UCF's undefeated right now, just hammered Bill Belichick and some of those guys that work down there and personnel think they invented football. The first North Carolina broadcast, I knew that they were screwed with the excuses they made and poured out there. We got 70 new players and only one NFL player. Well, why don't you get more NFL players? I mean, you had all offseason to get more NFL players from the portal. I mean, Kurt Cignetti, he brought a lot of guys with him from James Madison, and I know he was thankful for that because those were guys that helped get the culture and stuff off the ground. But there's no way they would be 2-2 if he was down there in Chapel Hill. So,
no, and it's been that's been wild to watch, and it also shows that people that think this guy's a great coach or this guy's a great, everything doesn't always work out the way you think it's going to work out. North Carolina is finding out the hard way via a $10 million bust. I wonder if Jordan is on the
payroll. Well, you're only as good as the guys you put around you. Obviously the head coach sets the tone, but you got to have good coaches around you. And I think Clemson, when they were winning national championships, they had great players, electric players with the ball in their hands, and certainly terrific quarterback play. But they had all outstanding offensive and defensive coordinators. And if you look at Indiana, Coach Haynes, I mean, how did Ball State not hire Coach Haynes? I mean, like, I think Coach Haynes can now wait around for – I think Coach Haynes can – if Indiana can keep paying him and giving him a raise, he could wait around and see you take a little more attractive job. Now, I love the Ball State Fighting Football Cardinals. I married a Muncie girl. Her old man coached there for a long time, but it's a challenging gig. And but Coach Haynes, Indiana, is lucky to have him back. And then certainly Coach Shanahan starts a great – they got great position coaches, you know, guys like Ola Adams.
Bob Bostad on the offensive line has been a huge, huge benefit for the Hoosiers.
I don't know Coach Bostad well, but I see him out and about. I just love the old school coaches. You know, I'm kind of an old soul myself, so I just love the vibe of Kurt Cignetti. I love the vibe of Coach Bostad. Coach Bostad had to check in at a high school – and they asked him like a new age question. Oh, you had to scan one of those things for the roster. And I think he just wanted a piece of paper with the names on it, man. Yeah. So that, you know, just little funny thing. He probably would have no idea what I'm talking. I mean, I was just observing from afar, but obviously he's a great football mind that's been around a long time that a younger coach like Coach Shanahan has in the room, where they're game planning for an opponent that's seen it all, seen everything, that can add to the conversation, right? And so Coach Cignetti has hired great coaches, and collectively the high tide raises the ships, man. And with recruiting, people always want to say, well, will this lead to more blue chippers? And it's kind of like, for me, Michigan State had 5 years where they won at least 11 games under Coach Mark D'Antonio, made a college football playoff, won some Big Tens. The year after Ohio State won the national title, they went into Columbus and beat the Buckeyes with Ezekiel Elliott and all them. Like, those were some damn good Michigan State teams. Like, what? Why do we want to change our recruiting? We're getting the right guys for us, and we're maximizing it. And so for Indiana, they're getting the right guys for them, and they're going to continue to do that. And maybe they will attract an extra blue helps in state, right? Like guys like Caleb Elkins, Brandon Sharp, like those guys, like that maybe would have looked for a sexier logo elsewhere. If those are guys Indiana covets, it helps keep them home. But I say stay with the recipe, man. Guys that know how to play the game, that have a chip on their shoulder, that are hungry, that are going to continue the culture and the foundation. And then you keep coaching them up and getting the best out of them. And maybe you add maybe adds one or two guys a year that you wouldn't have got the year before. And that adds up, because then that's two guys 1 year. That's four extra guys over 2 years, six extra guys over three, and eight extra guys over four. And then do that in the portal. That's 32 extra guys that maybe you wouldn't have got if you're winning, that you like, that fit the bill of what you're looking for, that doesn't go to another school that's maybe had similar success, like an Iowa State or something, but you like them. And so you got them, you know? So that's where it's at for me. Indiana's not going to just start landing the number one defensive lineman in the country. They're still going to be a developmental program, and nobody's developing and scheming and culturing better than Coach Cignetti and the Hoosiers right now. And just keep attacking the trail on the guys you want. Own the state on the guys you want. Make sure you recruit the right guys in your region, and don't take bad players. There's a lot of good players out there. The teams that consistently stink are the ones that take bad players. And that's what recruiting's about, who you get, not who you don't get. So don't take the receiver that's a step too slow. Don't take the corner that doesn't have makeup speed. Don't take the undersized stiff linebacker. You know, just avoid that. And it's easier said than done.
Absolutely. Some important games this weekend. USC at Illinois, we know. Notre Dame at Arkansas. Man, this is kind of a make or break for Notre Dame as they travel down to Big Sui. They've already got the two losses, and they're barely hanging on into the top 25. They cannot lose this game.
Well, for the goal and the mission that they have year in and year out, they can't lose again. Now, we kind of talked about assistant coaches. Notre Dame had Al Golden as their defensive coordinator last year, who was maybe the best assistant coach in college football. I mean, you could make an argument for some other guys, but he would be on your short list of – and so he brought a lot to Notre Dame. Notre Dame lost some key players on defense, but Chris Ash is really struggling. And he was a guy that I think his I'm going to look it up because I don't want to missay it. So Chris Ash, before he was at Notre Dame last year, I want to say he was off field somewhere, because he was the Raiders DB coach in 2022, 2023. He was the Jaguars safeties coach in 2021. So Notre Dame kind of picked, he was a scout. So he just kept — the game passes people by sometimes. It just is what it is. Hey, we're not who we once were, Jim. Maybe we can Toby Keith it. Maybe we can Toby Keith it and be as good as we once were on some days. The game hasn't passed by Coach Cignetti yet. Obviously, he's still doing his thing. But Chris Ash was going the wrong way in his career, and then gets a life raft to be the D coordinator at Notre Dame, which is one of the best jobs you could possibly have. And they're not playing well for a bunch of reasons, and or playing to the expectation of that place. So to me, you got to make sure — that's the hardest thing as a head coach, making sure you have great people in your building over and over and over and over. And it's hard. It's hard to always have elite coaches. So I'm not saying it's easy, but Notre Dame — and look, Coach Ash has the rest of the year to continue writing his story, and Notre Dame maybe will improve each week, but it ain't looking good, you know? And this is a big game for Arkansas. Now, Notre Dame can score. I think Notre Dame will play hard every week, just like Clemson will. I mean, Dabo Sweeney's a great coach, man. They're in a little bit of a rut, but they're not going to quit. They're going to play hard. Notre Dame's going to play hard. Coach Freeman's going to have the right mentality for his program. He's got the right kids in there. They're going to play hard. Some teams quit. They're not going to quit. They're going to try and figure it out. They should beat Arkansas. They should win that game. So we'll see how it goes.
We certainly will. Steve Wiltfong, make sure you're checking out all of his content at On3.
We need more readers. We need more IU readers, man. I mean, like, what a time to be alive if you are an Indiana fan right now. So get over to the Hoosier.com, man. I would love to talk IU with you every day, man. I'll be on the message boards. Let's talk Indiana football, Indiana high school football recruiting. Let's talk about future opponents, recruiting, the whole nine, transfer portal coming soon. No better time to get on the Hoosier.com, on the Rivals On3 network. And if you see me around Zionsville, man, let's talk IU football in person.
Buy him a cup of coffee and he'll talk your ear off, I promise you, because he's got a head full of knowledge. Steve, we'll see you in a couple weeks, probably after the Indiana-Oregon game. See how that thing plays out.
Yeah, looking forward to it. You guys take care.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate you joining us. Steve Wiltfong from On3, that you can find via the Hoosier.com. We're back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Tuesday. Man, that was a blast with Steve Wiltfong from On3, one of their national football recruiting writers. And we'll keep in touch with him. But plus, Ari Wasserman and those guys, will get them on as well as the season progresses. As this season's turning into more and more fun. Can't wait. Tomorrow, don't forget to join us. Full load. Dylan Sin joining us. Kyle Nenrip. K-Bro is back in the house tomorrow along with Zach Browning. So plenty to get to. And stop getting your news from Facebook, people. I saw something yesterday that's just constant. That was totally fake. And the amount of people that were responding to it blew my mind. Stop. Appreciate you guys, each and everybody else. Mike DeCourcy, Steve Wiltfong, and most importantly, you. Go out, have yourselves an incredibly great day. Until tomorrow, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.